Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, if you've got your Bibles this morning, let's find 1 Samuel chapter 26. 1 Samuel chapter 26. We are moving quickly through 1 Samuel. And so we will be done here, Lord willing, in a couple weeks. Today's story is back to the action of Saul and David. This will be the last time that we see David and Saul interact together. So when they leave this morning, when we leave this story this morning, this will be the last time that David and Saul meet in person. And so we'll see some similarities to chapter 24 from a couple weeks ago. And so let's jump right into it. We'll read the first three verses, kind of come back, and then we'll get to moving. All right, then the Ziphites. Now, you might remember the Ziphites, if that sounds familiar. That's because several chapters ago, they came to Saul and said, "Hey, Saul, is David not hiding himself in Hachilah, which is east of Jeshimon?" They said the exact same thing. So I concluded this week, as I was studying, the Ziphites really don't like David. Right? They must really have it out for David because twice they have gone to Saul and ratted David out in his location, right? And so in verse number 2, with that information, Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph with 3,000, notice, chosen men of Israel. So again, he handpicks kind of 3,000 of his best soldiers, just like he did in chapter 24. To seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. Now, real quick, before we go to verse 23, so just kind of get in your mind where this is located at. So, because we've talked a lot, I realized this week, we've talked a lot about the geography of Israel in 1 Samuel. We've talked about the wilderness of Maon and the wilderness of Paran and the forests of Hereth and all of this. So if you were to look at a map and you were to find Jerusalem, everybody got that in their mind? Jerusalem, all right? Right below Jerusalem is the forest of Hereth. That's where David was earlier in his initial fleeing from Saul. Then you would come to the wilderness of Ziph. Then the wilderness of Maon, which is where we were in chapter 24. And then in the wilderness of Paran, which is way down in South Israel. That's where David was last week. Okay, so Jerusalem, forests, wilderness of Ziph, wilderness of Maon, and way down at the bottom. Wilderness of Paran, or Paran, however you want to say it. Okay, got that in your mind? So we're just kind of south of Jerusalem in a deserty, hilly, rugged wilderness area. All right, so that's where David's at. So verse 3, "And Saul encamped on the hill of Hachilah, which is beside the road east of Jeshimon." Remember, that's where the Ziphites said David was. "But David remained in the wilderness when he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness." Okay, so David sent out spies and learned, and Saul had come. All right, so let's stop right there. So you hear, where's Saul at? Saul is camped on the hill of Hachilah by the road, which is east of Jeshimon. All right, so Saul is encamped on a natural high spot, so he's got high ground. Why would he do that? So that he can see, right? So he can find David. Now, David is supposed to be at that location, but when Saul gets there, David's not there because David has gone further into the wilderness of Ziph, right? So Saul and his 3,000 soldiers camp on this hill, and when David hears that Saul is in the area, David sends out spies to go learn and see where Saul's at. That's how David knows where Saul is. All right, everybody, we good so far? All right, let's go to verse number 5, because this is where the action of the story is going to happen between verse 5 and 12. "Then David rose and came to the place where Saul had camped." So David, he sent out spies, and they came back. And so then David said, "I want to go look at it for myself to see the lay of the land," kind of thing. So David rose and went to the place where Saul had encamped, and David saw where the place where Saul lay, where he was sleeping. Now, listen to this next part very carefully, okay? Because this is going to be kind of important for later. where Saul lay. So he saw where Saul was laying with Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. Saul was lying within the encampment while the army was encamped around him. All right, so remember, where is Saul camped? On a hill. Where are all the soldiers? Around the hill. And where is Saul at? In the very middle. With who? Abner. Go back to verse number 5, Tucker. With Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. Now let's stop right there for just a second and ask a question. Who is Abner? All right. Well, he's the son of Ner. Well, who is that, right? It's a great question. That is Saul's uncle. Okay? So Abner is his first cousin. So you have Saul and his first cousin, and he is, his first cousin Abner, is the commander of his army. In other words, he's the general of all the army, including these 3,000 soldiers. Now, in just a second, we'll see that we can get a little more specific even with the layout of this camp. So they're on a hill. All the soldiers are around the top and the sides of the hill. There's 3,000 of them, depending on how big the hill is. Saul is camped in the middle, and Abner, David will find Abner, lying around him. In other words, Abner is sleeping next to Saul as kind of a last line of defense to protect the king. Make sense? Now, the text doesn't tell us whether they're in a tent or they're just, you know, sleeping under the stars, but that's irrelevant for the story. So, on a hill, 3,000 soldiers, Saul's in the middle with his best war fighter and general right next to him, okay? And that's what David sees. David is hiding out, he's doing reconnaissance, and David sees all of this, all right? Let's go to verse number 6. Then David, now we're going to talk about these two guys as well because you need to know who they are. Then David said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Joab's brother Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, who will go down with me into the camp to Saul? And Abishai said, I will go down with you. All right, so let's talk about this. Who are these people? Now, Ahimelech. This is the second Ahimelech we have met in 1 Samuel. The first one, they're not the same people, okay? The first one is Ahimelech the priest at Nob. All right, so you remember when David was fleeing from Saul and he went to the house of the Lord at Nob and he asked for bread, and the priest Ahimelech said, well, we don't have any regular bread, but we have the holy bread. And David said, it is good. And then David asked for a sword, and the priest said, well, we've got the sword of Goliath. And David took the sword of Goliath. That's earlier in Samuel. Well, that Ahimelech is dead because Saul killed them all, right? This is another Ahimelech, but notice his name. Ahimelech the Hittite. Probably this guy was born a pagan. His family were pagan, the Hittites. They did not serve the Lord. But his family immigrated, if you want to look at it that way, to Israel and became followers of God. And so, hence his name. Right? He has a very Jewish name. Right? And so, this guy is an immigrant who has become a follower of God, and who now serves in the command of David. In fact, he obviously is really good at what he does because David takes two guys with him and he's one of them to go on this reconnaissance mission. The other guy is Joab's brother, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah. Now, all of that is important because Zeruiah is David's sister. So Joab and Abishai, and there's a third, she has another son called Asahel, they are three of David's most trusted, loyal, and best war fighters in all of his army. Joab will actually be David's commander of the army when he becomes king, and Abishai and his brother Asahel will be critical in David's movement and ascension to David becoming king. And so Abishai tells his uncle, hey, I'll go with you. All right, so David, Abishai, and Ahimelech are reconnaissancing, that's a word, we'll make it one today, reconnaissancing Saul's camp. And then David says, hey guys, which one of y'all is going to go with me into the camp? Now, let's be honest. Abishai does not bat an eye and says, hey, I'll go with you. Ahimelech was probably like the rest of us. Now, I'm assuming this is not in the text. Assuming, going, David, what are you thinking? There's like 3,000 of them and three of us. What are you talking about? Abishai, unabated, goes, I'll go down with you. Let's keep reading and see what happens. Verse 7. So David and Abishai went to the army by night. All right, so they waited to dark. Smart move. Okay. And they go down to the army. And there lay Saul sleeping within the encampment. So what does that mean? They literally walked through the entire 3,000-man army to the very center and found Saul sleeping with his spear stuck in the ground. Right, Saul, we all remember Saul loves the spear. He's tried to kill David with it twice, even threw it at his own son, trying to kill his son Jonathan. But here David's spear, or Saul's spear, is stuck in the ground at his head, and Abner and the army lay around him. In other words, everybody is asleep. And David and Abishai just waltz right through the middle of them. You know, it's kind of like one of those cartoon movies where they like tiptoe in and tiptoe and walk around and try to be quiet. That's what I thought about as I was reading this. And nobody wakes up, right? Verse 8. Then Abishai, just like the people in the cave in chapter 24, say, God has given your enemy into your hand this day. But he goes one step further than the guys in the cave. The guys in the cave are just like, hey, God's given you in, your enemy into your hand. But look what Abishai says. Now please let me pin him to the earth with one stroke of the spear. I will not strike him twice. Abishai pretty confident in his abilities. Now notice what David doesn't say in the end of verse 8 or in verse 9. David does not say, come on, Abishai, you're not that good. What are you talking about? Does he say that? Not at all. So what does David know about Abishai? He absolutely could do it. Right? He is not dissuaded in just because Abishai lacks ability. He's pretty confident that Abishai could do what he said he could do. That he could literally take Saul's spear and pin him to the ground in one stroke. So David is not... He's confident in Abishai's ability. So what does he say? Do not destroy him, for who can put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless or be without fault? In other words, just like in the cave, David still holds Saul to be God's anointed person to lead Israel. And he has come to the conclusion that if someone were to kill him, they would be found, especially in an innocent situation like this would be found to be guilty before the Lord, right? That's the insinuation that he's saying to Abishai. If you do this, you will be guilty before the Lord. So look what he says in verse 10. This is interesting. And then David said, as the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die. He'll die naturally, or he will go down in battle and perish. David is unsure how Saul will die, but in some way, David is confident that Saul will die. Natural causes, he'll die in battle, or the Lord will strike him dead. Right? Verse 11. The Lord forbid that I should put out my hand against the Lord's anointed, but take now the spear that is at his head and the jar of water, and let us go. In other words, I'm not going to kill him. You're not going to kill him. It will be the Lord's doing when Saul dies. But what we are going to do is let him know we were here. And so they grab the spear and they grab the water. So David took the spear and jar of water from Saul's head and they went away. No man saw it or knew it, nor did any wait. Now listen to the last part. For they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen upon them. Interesting, right? So what does that tell us? The Lord was working in the sleep of 3,000 plus men who were seeking to kill David before David even got there. Right? So the scene is that David, they're all encamped on the hill, Saul in the middle, Abner around him, jar of water at Saul's head, spear stuck in the ground, And David and his men are in the bushes, afar away, seeing the lay of the land, doing reconnaissance. And then they decide to go down. And God was working before they even decided to go down, because he caused all of the men to fall into a deep sleep so that nobody moved and saw. I mean, and David and Abishai walked straight through the entire army unnoticed. Nobody woke up. So that they got in and got out before anything was noticed. Now, it's interesting that David takes the spear and the water. And you could say, well, why is it interesting? That's the only thing that was around him. Well, and that may be true. But there's some symbolic nature going on as well. Because what is the spear for Saul? That's his weapon. That's how he protects himself. It's a sign of authority. It's a sign of ability. It's a sign of leadership. But what else does Saul take? What else does David take? Water. Why is that important? Because they're in the desert, right? I mean, they're in a desert wilderness. Water is life. So David takes the two things Saul needs. He needs a spear for battle and water to live. And he takes both of them. Then when David went to the other side and stood, notice the text says, far off, smart move again, on top of the hill. So he's on another hill far off with a great space between them. Okay, so David has got in, got out, and now he's on another hill far away. David yells and calls out to the army. But look who he addresses first. Abner, the son of Ner. Again, who is Saul's cousin, commander of the army, greatest warfighter in all of Israel, supposedly, saying, will you not answer Abner? So he calls out to Abner first. And Abner answered, who are you who calls for the king? Now, David could have got sidetracked and jumped right to Saul, but he doesn't. He sticks with Abner. Let's keep reading. Verse 15. And David said to Abner, are you not a man? Well, is Abner a man? Yeah. Who is like you in Israel? Supposedly nobody. Why then have you not kept watch over the Lord the king? And in Abner's mind, because he's been in a what? Deep sleep. What do you mean I did watch over the king? For one of the people came in to destroy the king, your Lord. Now, this is kind of in between the lines. It's not in the text, right? But Abner's heart at this moment must have gone into his stomach. And he's probably thinking, what in the world are you talking about? Is that David? Like, what is he talking about? Nobody's been in the camp. I didn't hear anything. Verse 16. This thing that you have done is not good. And Abner's probably thinking, what thing did I do? I didn't do nothing. As the Lord lives, you deserve to die because you have not kept watch over the Lord. The Lord's anointed. And again, Abner's probably thinking, how have I not kept watch? Then David drops the line. And now see where the king's spear and the jar of water that was at his head. And at that moment, Abner went, oh no. Because what? They're gone. Right? So let's stop right here for a minute. What has David just done? Think about it. He has discredited, quote unquote, the greatest fighter in all of Israel in front of 3,000 not run-of-the-mill soldiers who got conscripted out of the fields, 3,000 chosen men. And one little old guy just let out that he came into the camp, took the king's spear and the water, authority, life, and ability, and then took them back out of the camp, and nobody knew, including the king's own cousin who was asleep right beside him as a last line of defense who should have been protecting the king. And David discredits and humiliates him in front of everybody. Right? Again, just like in the cave, David is trying to show, why are you following these people to everybody? Why are you following them? They are not leading you into right and good. Right? At this point, Saul is now awake. And David and Saul are going to have an interchange in the remaining verses of the chapter. Let's read those. Saul recognized David's voice and said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king," still showing deference to the king. And he said, "Why does the Lord pursue after his servant?" Again, why are you chasing me? He said this in chapter 24. "For what have I done?" David doesn't know. That's why he's asking. "What evil is on my hands?" Verse 19. "Now therefore, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If it is the Lord who has stirred you up against me, may he accept an offering. But if it is men, may they be cursed before the Lord. For they have driven me out this day that I should have no share in the heritage of the Lord, saying, 'Go serve other gods.'" Now, what is David doing? What point is he trying to make with Saul? He's trying to do two things. First, in that part, "if it is the Lord or if it is men," he's asking Saul to evaluate where this desire to pursue David to the ends of the earth comes from. Is it really the Lord putting this in your heart? Or are other men stirring you up? Now, David knows the answer, right? David knows it is other people. He's already addressed this once in chapter 24 when he cut the corner of Saul's robe off in the cave. But again, he's obviously maybe thinking Saul's a slow learner. He needs extra help, right? And so he asks him again, "Who is causing this desire in you? Is it the Lord or is it men?" And he's asking Saul to evaluate who is really behind pushing him to this desire to kill David. Then secondly, he's reminding Saul this whole part about at the end of that verse about the land and pushing him out and saying, "Go serve other gods." What he's reminding Saul is that David, just like Saul, is a son of the covenant. In other words, he is a descendant of Abraham. He is under the covenant blessing of Israel. In other words, David, as a son of the covenant, as a son of Israel, should have a rightful share in God's blessing of all Israel. But at Saul's behest, he and his army are pushing David so much so that David is saying, "If you don't stop, I'm going to have to go live somewhere else, and I will not get to experience God's best as a covenant member of God's community, because you won't allow me to live here." Right? It'd be like, you know, if you shared property with family. Whoa. Right? Be like if you shared property with family and you got that one family member that's, you know, we all got that one, that's just ugly and mean and hateful and on you. And finally, you're just like, "Hey, if you don't stop, I'm selling out." Oh, rah, rah, rah. You know, and then you entertain selling out to a real estate developer just to make them mad, right? That never happened. Yeah, it happens all the time, right? That's what he's doing, but on a grander scale, because God's covenant blessing is involved. And he's telling Saul, like, "Look, I should have a right as God's covenant son to live and experience God's blessing for his people in his land, but you are pushing and pushing. In fact, your own people are saying, 'Well, why don't you just go serve another God?'" And David's like, "I don't want to do that. I'm a son of the covenant just like you are, Saul." So he's trying to get Saul to realize the implications of if he keeps on going, what this will mean for David and David's people, right? All right, let's keep going. Verse 20. "Now therefore, let not my blood fall to the earth away from the presence of the Lord," again with this covenant blessing, "for the king of Israel has come out to seek a single flea like one who hunts a partridge in the mountains." In other words, Saul, you've taken all of these resources to go after one person. What are we doing? All right, 22. Here we go. Then Saul, Tucker, I jumped. You're quick. Good job, bud. "Then Saul said, 'I have sinned. Return, my son, for I will no more do you harm, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Behold, I have acted foolishly and have made great mistakes.'" So again, Saul is conciliatory, trying to make amends. Verse 22. "And David answered, 'Here's the spear, O king. Let one of the young men come and get it.'" come and take it. In other words, I'm not coming back to you. I am not falling for that trick. In reality, I've already made it into your camp once and made it out alive. I don't know if I want to try it again now that everybody's awake. Right? So he says, hey, I'm going to leave it here. Somebody can come and get it. All right, final exchange. Then David says, the Lord rewards every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord gave you into my hand today, and I would not put out my hand against the Lord's anointed. Verse 24. Behold, as your life was precious this day in my sight, so may my life be precious in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me out of all tribulation. All right, verse 25. Then Saul said to David, blessed be you, my son David. You will do many things and will succeed in them. And David went his way, and Saul returned to his place. All right, this is the last time they'll come together. Now, and I want to talk about real quick about those last few things that David says to Saul. David, again, so he's asking a question. He asks a question. Hey, who's behind this desire to kill me? He says, if you keep going, you're taking away my ability to experience God's covenant blessing. Then he reminds Saul of two things. The first thing that he reminds Saul of is this, that God rewards faithfulness, righteousness, and following after him. In other words, he's saying, you need to judge between, like, Saul, you need to judge whether you will receive God's blessing for your action, right? And then the second thing that David reminds Saul of, Tucker, pull up verse 23, I think it is, again. 24, go to the next one, sorry. Then he reminds Saul to have a divine perspective, because look what he says, let's read it again. Behold, as your life was precious this day in my sight, so may my life be precious in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me out of all tribulation. In other words, David is saying, look, Saul, I held your life as precious because I could have killed you. I could have let Abishai pin you to the ground with one push of the spear, but I didn't. I didn't kill you. He didn't kill you. Nobody killed you. You're still alive. I viewed your life as precious. The Lord views my life as precious. And so the insinuation is, Saul, you should then view my life as precious, right? I viewed your life as precious. The Lord views my life as precious. You should view, Saul, you should view my life as precious. In other words, David is encouraging Saul to have a divine perspective on the preciousness and the sacredness of life. So David is calling Saul to action in every one of these things, every one of these conversations he's having with Saul. Examine your heart. Why are you trying to kill me? If you keep going, you're pushing a son of Israel out of God's covenant blessing because he's going to have to go live somewhere else. Remember, Saul, God rewards faithfulness and righteousness. And also, you need to have God's view of the sacredness of life. And so Saul then has some other conciliatory remarks. I assume he sends a servant to go get his spear and his water jar, and then both men part, and they will not meet again. We'll see in the next few verses, next few chapters over the next couple weeks, David kind of goes off and does his thing, and then we'll finally meet Saul at kind of the end in this final battle where Saul ends up dying in battle. There's a few little things that happen in between. This is the last time they'll be together. And so what does this story tell us about today? Like, if we were going to kind of boil this chapter 26 down, I think there's two really big ideas that jump off the page. The first one is God's sovereignty. God's sovereignty, right? So the first thing is, we see some pictures about God, and the first thing we see about God is God's sovereignty. You say sovereignty, sovereignty about what? Sovereignty even over people's sleep, right? Because what does God do? He causes people who might have been tired from the march, but he causes them to go into this extraordinarily deep, unwakeful, we like to call it at the Graham household, you could sleep through a hurricane type sleep that allows David and his man Abishai to walk through the camp unnoticed, to grab a spear, they're literally looking over Saul with Abner around him somewhere, pick up his spear, carry his water jar, and then make it all the way back out of the camp before anybody knows it. And had David not hollered out, they wouldn't have even woken up then. That's kind of what the text implies for us to understand. And so God is sovereign over sleep. He's sovereign that he goes in front of David, and he's working on David's behalf, even when David doesn't even know it. when David says to Abishai, let's go down to the camp, he has no idea that they're going to be in a deep sleep. In fact, if we read that verse over again that talks about the deep sleep, that is not David quoting what the Lord says. That is the author telling us what happened. In other words, David had no idea that they were going to be in deep sleep, right? But God was working before David even got there. This text also is a reminder that God rewards people who are faithful and righteous to Him. Look. It may appear in society today that those of us who follow after the Lord are not rewarded like we think we ought to be, right? I don't know about you, but I've been on the socials. I've been in the YouTube and on the Facebook page, and you see people who you know are not living for the Lord. Let's be honest. Let's just be real for a moment. Who you know are not living for the Lord like you're living for the Lord. Okay. I know it's not right that we should compare ourselves to other people, but let's be real. We do it every now and then, right? And you see all of the grand accomplishments and all of the prosperity and all of the good that looks like. And in those moments, we think, I do at least, come on, Lord. Remember me just a little bit, right? But what does this text show us? That God does, in fact, remember and reward those who are faithful and righteous in following Him. It may not look exactly the way we think it ought to. It may not turn out to be the type of blessing we think it should be, and in the moment we think it should be. But David is a reminder, the Lord blesses those who righteously follow after Him. And so we see a few things about God, that God rewards and blesses, and that God is sovereign, many times even working before we even get where we think we're supposed to be, right? But here's the other thing, and this is where I kind of want to draw a little bit of application for us this morning, is that we see great growth in David this week. All right, follow with me for a second. Follow with me. In chapter 24, what happens? Cave, right? David cuts off the corner, right? And Saul, he saves Saul. He doesn't kill Saul. Good job. David gets a gold star. Okay? What happens in chapter 25, though? Somebody calls him names and talks bad about him. And what is David ready to do? Every man take the sword. He takes 400, two-thirds of his army to go, not leave one male alive because he said mean things about me. Let's be real, that's what happened. So David doesn't want to kill the king, but he wants to kill Nabal because he said mean things. And then Abigail intervenes, and what does she tell him last week? Hey, buddy, don't take matters in your own hands. Let God fight your battles. And what do we see happening here in this passage this morning? What does David tell Abishai when Abishai is like, hey, I can do this. Stick him to the ground. What does he tell Abishai? The Lord will fight this battle. Right? In essence, he's saying, I don't know how. The Lord will take him. He'll die of natural causes, or he may die in battle, but it won't be by my hand. That is great growth on the part of David. David learned his lesson from his now wife, Abigail, that sometimes we just need to let the Lord fight our battles for us. David, again, could have taken Saul's life and everybody would have been okay. But David let God work out salvation in front of him. Here's another way where we see David's great growth. This time, not in his action, but in what he tells Saul. What does he tell Saul? We just talked about it. Saul, you should have a divine perspective on the sacredness and the preciousness of life. What did Abigail call David to do at the very end of their conversation? To have a divine perspective. Remember last week, she said, hey, bud, I know you're not the king now. I'm paraphrasing here. I know you're not the king now, but one day you will be the king. And when you become king, you don't want to have any regrets over actions you've done now because you were mad. We said last week, Abigail calls David to have a divine perspective on an issue. What is David doing today for Saul? Asking Saul to have a divine perspective on an issue. This week, the issue is not whether to kill Nabal or not. It's to view life as precious and sacred as God views it. That's growth. That's growth in taking. We see a trend. We see in David between 24, 25, and 26. We see the actual transition between knowledge to wisdom. David gained knowledge from Abigail. Now we see it translated into wisdom because David is able to take those ideas in a different situation, in different circumstances, and apply them to himself and Abishai and to Saul. And so we see great growth in David. And that's the way it should be. As we grow, as we live with Jesus longer, we should be growing in our relationship with the Lord so that we are changing out knowledge for wisdom, right? So here's the question. It may seem like a jump, but I don't think it's that big of a jump, right? How are you growing in your relationship with the Lord? Now, if you were to read a theology textbook that Logan or I have in our office, that process would be called a big $10 word called sanctification, which simply means the process. Here's the way I define it. The process of becoming more like Jesus. The longer we live in relationship with the Lord, the more we should be growing to be like Him. Right? So if I were to ask you at the end of 2026, are you more like Jesus this year than you are in December 31 than you are on January 18th? The answer should be yes. For some of us, it won't be, unfortunately. Right? And if I were to ask you, hey, are you more like Jesus today than you were this time last year? Some of us might go, I hope so. So today the challenge is, let's be like David and transitioning just from knowledge, which is good, to wisdom, which is best, in our growing in our relationship with the Lord, so that in a year from now, we can look back and say, hey man, I really grew this year in my relationship with the Lord. And there's a variety of ways that can play itself out. One of the areas I am want to grow, being honest here with you this morning, this year is in my prayer life with the Lord, right? Okay? It needs to be better, all right? I pray. I need to pray better and more, right? That's one of my goals this year, right? Feel free to ask me next year this time, how did your prayer go this year? I am making it an effort to be, it's better, right? I'm making a name for that to be my answer. But what about you, right? We all need to be like David. We all need to be growing in our relationship with the Lord, transitioning from knowledge to wisdom. So is that going to be you this year? That's the challenge. What areas do you need to grow in your relationship with the Lord this year? And let me encourage you, here's the challenge. Are you going to do it in 2026? I sure hope you will.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.